This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
A Gal Media property. Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios. O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
And a good Thursday morning to you. It is Wake Up Call, SB Nation Radio. You ever heard of a couple? You ever have friends who are going through a divorce? It's tough. It really is. Especially if you if your wife likes the woman and you're friends with the guy and you do things as a couple and you find out they're getting a divorce. It's really a tough situation. But have you ever had that couple that's kind of going through a divorce, but they're getting together with counseling and you're optimistic at times that they'll get together, but maybe like your wife's like, nah, that ain't gonna happen. She's not on board. And you're like, no, he's gonna change. He's gonna do things. Nah, and your wife's like, nah, that's not gonna happen. That's Major League Baseball, guys, in a nutshell. That's exactly what's going on. You just get the feeling when they get together and they have these meetings, it's like, yeah, no, they really want to be together. They really want to do something together. They want to have this partnership. They want to have this relationship. And your wife's in the corner shaking her head going, no, it's not going to happen. And trust me, it's too many things. It's too much bad blood. There's something wrong. It's not going to happen. That's the way I was feeling about Major League Baseball yesterday. Rob Manfred flew out to Arizona for a face-to-face meeting with Tony Clark, who's the president or executive director of the Players Union. Face-to-face meeting. No Zoom during quarantine, during COVID-19. Face-to-face meeting. And it looked optimistic. And there's feelings like, all right, you know what? Maybe Major League Baseball wants to do something here. Maybe the union wants to capitulate and actually put together something, a good plan. And there was all this optimism, and now we're kind of back to square one. It's nothing really happened, right? There's a 50-game proposal. Now it's moved up to, 60? And that's it. Prorated salaries at 60 games. The players want more games because they want more money. That's the bottom line. And for whatever reason, they cannot come together on an agreement. The owners still want to be limiting the amount of money that they give out without this kind of revenue that they're getting. And the players want as much money as they possibly can, like any union does. That's what the union's job is. So if you began yesterday with the day of the news that Manfred and Clark were meeting in Arizona and they were going to just hammer this thing out, if I'm going to meet somebody face-to-face in the age of coronavirus, I'm not leaving without a deal. But they left without a deal, and we still have no idea when baseball is going to get started. We've got a throwback Thursday today. We got the plan for the NBA's return. It was interesting next.
Shake an apple off an apple tree. Shake a shake of sugar, but you'll never shake me. No siree.
It's Thursday, which means it's Throwback Thursday on Wake Up Call. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, we're going back to 1960. On this date, Arnold Palmer won the U.S. Open at Cherry Hills in Denver. And he did it by firing a final round 65. Now, back in 1960, the U.S. Open would have two rounds on the Saturday. They didn't play a Sunday round. So you would play in the morning, you'd take a break, have some lunch, then you'd go out and play your final round. In between rounds, he calculated in his head what it would take to win the U.S. Open. He said he needed a 65. He was talking to two golf writers, including the late Dan Jenkins. He said, if I go out there and shoot 65, I'll get 280. 280 always wins the Open. And Dan Jenkins replied, yeah, when Hogan shoots it. And he went out there and drove the first green at Cherry Hills, which is 346 yards long, and he made birdie. He would go on to shoot that 65, and he would win the U.S. Open at Cherry Hills on this date. Now, listen, I love Throwback Thursday because we do a couple of things where sometimes there's a little bit of nostalgia where we talk about something that happened within a 20-year period, maybe a 15-year period, and all of us can remember it and all of us can go back in time. For some of you young people, maybe it's a history lesson where we talk a little pop culture, we talk a little sports, and we bring the music of that era in Throwback Thursday. And I was just talking to Ron before the show. I said, this is going to be fun because this is pre-Beatles, yet we're still in sort of that sock hop, sort of get a milkshake and burger at the old, wear my leather jacket sort of era of the 50s. And we've got Elvis and we're kind of in the middle. So I'm kind of curious as to where the music is going to be this morning with Throwback Thursday. We're not in the kind of the hippie love of Woodstock.
Nope.
And we're kind of after the whole everybody get together. Like, we're not in the Grease era, and we're not in the Woodstock era.
No,
we're kind of in the middle.
Weird transition. There's not a lot of rock.
Right.
You know, exactly. Or if it is rock, it's that real bubblegum rock.
Yeah, exactly. Like, so the Pink Ladies and rock. The T-Birds, that's basically what we're kind of leaning towards. But it was 1960. So the U.S. Open, that year the U.S. Open was really interesting because it's probably a lot of cool storylines from that Open. Ben Hogan, who won three majors in 1953 and was probably considered at one time the greatest golfer who ever lived, even surpassing Bobby Jones, who had won an amateur Grand Slam. But Ben Hogan as a professional was probably at one point considered the greatest golfer of all time. He was kind of in the twilight of his career, but he was still competitive, and he was in contention. You've got 30-year-old Arnold Palmer, who was really amassing a following and sort of, you know, a love affair with the fans. I mean, he was the one, Arnie's Army, fans really related to him. He's kind of this working-class kind of golfer, had a cigarette in his mouth, swung like crazy, was always, you know, he'd be in a little bit of trouble but could always get out of it. And then at this U.S. Open, you had a 20-year-old Jack Nicklaus, who finished second. And he was, again, a rising star, kid out of Columbus, Ohio. Ben Hogan famously said, he played with Ben Hogan. Hogan famously said, I played with the kid today. If he could putt, he would have won this thing by six shots. It was that U.S. Open. He at one point, Nicklaus had the lead. Again, 20-year-old kid. And had the lead, but he three-putted a number of times on the back nine on the final round. But the story of the U.S. Open at Cherry Hills was two things. One was Palmer boasting about posting a score, you know, about putting up a 280, putting up a 65 in the final round, getting that, and driving the first green at Cherry Hills. Now, golf at altitude is different than golf at sea level. The ball goes a lot further. When I moved to Colorado, I didn't realize how much that was a factor. I kind of thought that was only like a pro thing. Like, it wouldn't affect my shots, right? It would just, that's more like a pro golfer. A guy who hits at 300 yards anyway, at altitude, he probably hits at 330, 335. Right, which is true. No, it'll affect anybody. Anybody who gets like the physics work. It doesn't matter what your handicap is. Physics the science just works no matter what. So it was kind of naive, and it is amazing. I mean, at altitude, the distances are pretty great, but 346 yards back in 1960 is a long way. He was playing with like small wooden clubs and a lot of balls that didn't go as far. And he smashed the heck out of that thing. Now, I've had the luxury of being able to... I played Cherry Hills twice when I was in Denver. And both times were media events for the U.S. Women's Open was going to be there. And there was another tournament that was there. So we got to play it twice as media members. And in the first tee box at Cherry Hills has a plaque that commemorates where Arnold Palmer stood to drive the first green. So if you want to try it, you can tee up from that location to try to drive the first green. And we did, and I didn't come close, but you know, it's still fun to give it a shot. But it's also fun to think about when you go there and you play with the, you know, these vastly improved equipment to realize what Palmer did in 1960 with the technology of the golf technology back then and how he was able to hit the ball 346 yards downhill. It's a downhill shot, but still, nevertheless, pretty awesome feat. So we go back to 1960. But there were other U.S. Opens on this date, including Tiger Woods winning his U.S. Open at Pebble Beach on the date in 2000, which was probably the one U.S. Open. I think you could talk to anybody who's a sports fan, and if they go, yeah, I'm not really into golf, they probably still remember that U.S. Open. It's one of those few golf tournaments, even though Tiger was dominating the field, you would watch it anyway. Even if you looked on the leaderboard and was like, oh, that guy's got like a 15-shot lead over everybody else, but I'm still going to watch this till the very end. Sometimes as sports fans, we love watching dominating athletic feats by individuals. And it doesn't matter what the score is. It doesn't matter what, you know, what the circumstances are. Sometimes we just like, we watch somebody mow through, whether it's tennis, golf, Tour de France when Lance Armstrong was doing it, when we were all like, yay, Lance, or any other athletic event. sometimes we look and say, this is not competitive, but it doesn't matter because I'm watching history. And I think with Tiger Woods in 2000 at Pebble Beach, when he was 12 under and the second place guy was 3 over, you would still watch every shot because you thought, how dominant can this guy get? Who's 24, who's really starting to, you know, he had won the Masters in 97. He'd revamped his swing, which didn't allow him to win another major again until the 99 PGA Championship. And then he did not win the Masters in 2000, and then he went on to win 3 straight to close out the season, and then won the Masters in 2001 to finish the Tiger Slam. So that's a throwback Thursday today as we continue on. So we're talking about Major League Baseball, and again, Manfred and Clark met in Arizona. There is no room yet. There is nothing new to report. I do this every day because every day I want to give you as close as we can and as much information as we can on the possibility of baseball returning. But we still don't have anything. I thought these two would come to an agreement. I thought if you're going to fly to Arizona and meet face-to-face with somebody, that you would not leave the room until you had something done. And they did not leave. They left the room without something done.
I mean, that's what normal people would do.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we would sit there. We would hash it out. Even if it took hours upon hours, even if it went into the wee hours of the morning, we would sit there and say, let's just come up with a deal. So baseball's not going to happen this year.
I mean, I'm with you. I am 100% with you. And again, I'm normally a guy that's like, I'm a little optimistic. I'm a glass half full kind of guy. There is no optimism in this. I have no idea why you would leave the room without a deal. If you flew all the way out there to talk, if you're not going to budge, if you're not going to compromise, why are you going to have meetings? Why are you meeting face-to-face? If you're Tony Clark and you're saying to yourself, I will not leave that room without a deal that gives my players a pay cut. I am not going to compromise. We are not taking one penny less than what we deserve per game on a prorated salary. I am not budging at all on this. And if you're Rob Manfred and that is what you're trying to get Tony Clark to do, you don't go to Arizona. You can make phone calls, do Skype, do Zoom, whatever you want to do. But if he's not going to budge, if that union is not going to budge one bit on that, then you don't go to Arizona. But that's not what Rob Manfred and the owners were willing to do. They said, look, here's the nuclear option on this. 50 games, which you don't want, prorated salary, which you do. So the total number of dollars that you're going to get from us is not what you're looking for, but we're not giving you the pay cut that you fear we're going to force on you. So here's the deal. 50 games, prorated salary. Manfred flies all the way to Arizona to meet face-to-face with Clark to give him what? 60 games. Prorated salary. 10 more games at prorated salary. That's what this meeting was about? That's why you flew all the way out there to offer 10 more games to the union?
Send an email.
My God! How ridiculous is this? You made a face-to-face meeting with the union chief to offer him 10 more games? What the hell do you think he was going to say? Golly!
How about a text game? 60? Question mark.
Yeah, that's all you have to do. You don't have to get on a private jet, fly all the way across the country to meet a guy to offer him 10 more games.
Maybe he just needed to get away from the wife.
What did you think? That extra 10 more games because it came with a twinkle in your eye was going to cause them to go, oh, he's sincere now.
You think he sat there and looked in the mirror and said, man, if I do this in person, he's got to agree.
Yeah, right?
He's got to.
If he sees the effort that I've put into flying all the way out here, he's going to think those 10 extra games are just golden. I mean, for the love of Pete, people, what is going on here?
I mean, did they,
does anybody learn negotiation 101?
Do we even know if they actually met each other? Maybe he just flew to Arizona because he was needing some Mexican food. I don't know.
I mean, I have no idea why in the world these two cannot figure this out. I mean, it is driving me crazy. And we have said this so many times. Again, it's the kind of the joke. We should just keep playing the show over and over again. Here is what drives me crazy about this. If you're baseball, you have a chance to own a period of time, but you're running out of time. When basketball heats up and hockey heats up, the Belmont Stakes is being run Saturday. Sports are coming back.
I completely disagree with you because they had that moment. That moment's gone.
That's true. That's gone.
They don't have that moment anymore. They don't have the ability to start July 4th and have at least 2, 3, maybe even 4 weeks before sport really kicks in. I mean, the MLS is going to start, what, July 10th or 17th or something
yep.
like that?
Yep.
So, I mean, even though it's the MLS, Major League Baseball should trump MLS. I don't know if it does anymore.
Even
if they both start at the same time, I think more people would be like, you know what, let me watch this World Cup soccer tournament that's in the United States. This might be more entertaining.
So ridiculous. And again, like I said earlier, you've got the sort of event sports, right? Where you, like the U.S. Open tennis, U.S. Open golf, where it's just this one brief period of time where it's just an event. You have all of that piled up into the calendar, right? When we're getting to the point where if all of these things go off, if all of these things happen, you're going to have one of the most loaded, packed schedules for sports in the next couple of months. Once we get to probably after July, and once we get into August, you're going to see football camps opening up, fall camps opening up for college football. All of the events that were going to be scheduled in the spring, like the Masters, like the Kentucky Derby, Preakness Stakes, a couple of other French Open tennis, all of those things are getting moved to the fall. And you and baseball sitting around can't do anything. Face-to-face meeting yesterday, didn't hammer things out. All of these sports are going to take center stage in baseball. You had your moment, and now you've blown it. All right, on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That is Ron with two N's. This will continue on a throwback Thursday on Wake Up Call.
Oh, you need time.
Thursday, which means it's Throwback Thursday on Wake Up Call. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Going back to 1960, Arnold Palmer winning the U.S. Open in Denver at Cherry Hills, his first U.S. Open, his only U.S. Open. Was Eisenhower the president because Kennedy won in November of 60?
Yes.
I would think so, right?
Yeah. Yeah, right. So Eisenhower would have been president.
On this date in 1960?
This is Eisenhower music.
What? Who is this?
This is Jimmy Jones.
Jimmy Jones.
With Good Timing.
Who's Jimmy Jones?
No idea.
I don't know who he is. I wonder if he was a big hit back in 1960.
This song sounds like so many other songs that I swear I've heard this before.
I think you're right. Yeah. Yeah, I think you're right. Hey, when your battery goes dead, everything can come to a stop, so don't take a chance on getting stranded. O'Reilly Auto Parts will test your battery free of charge. If your battery needs to be replaced, O'Reilly Auto Parts can help you find the exact battery that fits your car or truck at a guaranteed low price. Keep your car on the road by getting your battery tested for free at O'Reilly Auto Parts. O'Reilly Auto Parts, better parts, better prices every day. By the way, we're going through some of the ideas for Throwback Thursday, and we came up with Yeah, 2000 because of Tiger Woods winning the Open. 84, yep. Fuzzy Zeller won the Open. This is U.S. Open time.
Yep, 67.
67? Who won?
Jack Nicklaus beating Arnold Palmer.
Yeah, Palmer had so many close calls.
So got his revenge.
Yeah, so this is about Father's Day. This is when Father's Day usually fits on the calendar.
Yep.
And this is about, you know, again, this is like U.S. Open time, middle of June. So kind of miss it. So Father's Day is next week. No, this Sunday.
This Sunday.
What am I doing? Why do I not know these things?
No one celebrates. I mean, how many reminders of Mother's Day do you get?
Yeah, I know.
And Father's and by this time, if this was the Thursday before Mother's Day, we're sweating bullets.
Yeah.
Because all of a sudden now we're like, oh man, we got to plan something. You know.
What is Father's Day?
I don't know if the moms already plan stuff, if the wives already plan stuff, but. There's not much. I guess the thought process doesn't go too much. You just say, all right, he's going to barbecue.
Isn't the typical Mother's Day is like I'm either going to make or take my wife / mother of my kids for a brunch.
Yep.
Whereas Father's Day is more of we either going to make or take dad out for a steak dinner. Is that sort of the typical?
Take
idea?
You out? No.
Oh, you got to cook it yourself.
Yeah. Usually it's we're going to barbecue.
On the barbecue.
We're going to be in the backyard.
Yeah, that's Father's Day.
Your domain.
But Father's Day was always the U.S. Open.
You get taken out. Wait, I want to go back. You get taken out for
Father's Day?
Nobody gets taken out for Father's Day.
No, I've been taken out a few times, but most of the time it's watching. Yeah. Most of the time I'm
missing out.
No, most of the time I'm either cooking. But most of the, you know, it's supposed to be a day where I'm, you know, relax in the backyard in the hammock or play some golf or do something.
No, that's the thing. I mean, you're supposed to get a break.
Yeah.
Because fathers don't ever get a break.
Right. Right.
So, I'll just try to stay that with a straight face.
Say that. But we were saying earlier, typically the U.S. Open falls on Father's Day. The final round falls on Father's Day. That's what we would have been doing right now. This would have been U.S. Open week at Winged Foot in New York for the Open.
And you know what else usually happens on Father's Day?
What else?
Baseball games.
Baseball games on Father's Day as well.
You know, I mean, usually there's a lot of stories of, you know, baseball doing something great, like a player doing something great on Father's Day, like maybe a no-hitter being thrown.
Yeah, maybe that's
maybe
right.
Maybe a game-winning home run being hit.
Is Mother's Day, Father's Day, is that all creations of the Hallmark card industry or the greeting card industry? Just created a holiday?
Up there with, Valentine's Day.
Yeah, just like, you know, let's create a holiday for dad. And they're like, really? Yeah, think about all the cool dad gadgets we can sell all around the country.
So in that case, it's probably created by Sharper Image.
Yeah, that's right. Either that or the tie industry. Let's get dad a new tie for Father's Day. So
I can honestly say I've never received a tie for Father's Day.
I have never received a tie for Father's Day. I don't wear ties in general.
Yeah, that's an old thing, right?
Yeah. No, it's back when your dad would get on the train to go into the big city. To go to the office.
Yeah.
Back in 1960. You know, now I have like five or six.
Jimmy Jones and good timing.
Yep. Listen to Jimmy Jones on his Walkman. No, just kidding. No, I have like five or six ties. I never wear them. I hardly, and every now and then an event will come up and I got to wear a shirt and tie, but I don't.
The last job I had, this is ridiculous, but the last job I had where I had to wear a tie every single day to work was when I worked at Big Five Sporting Goods.
Oh, wow.
Because at that time, I think now they've gone to the polo shirt like most sporting goods stores do.
Right.
But at that time, I was in L.A., and I was working at a Big Five Sporting Goods to, you know, get the paycheck, and I remember, you know, I was a shoe salesman because that's all where we hung out. Then every once in a while, we had to carry out a ping pong table in the summer heat of L.A.
Wearing a shirt and tie?
Wearing a shirt and tie.
Oh, wow. That's wild.
You used to think it was, but that was the last shot. After that, I was like, I'm not going to ever wear a tie.
I had a guy at a radio station I worked at wore a shirt and tie every day, and he looked good. It wasn't just he really looked sharp. He was a news guy.
You run into those guys.
He was a news guy.
Those guys
like,
that do that.
Really serious. He was always in the newsroom. You know, he took his job. You know, he was never really – he wasn't a stern guy, but he was not a joking kind of laugh-a-minute kind of guy. But he was impeccably dressed for a radio man. Every morning, 5 a.m., I used to do the morning show on the sports station. I'd come in pajamas, for crying out loud, right? I mean, I'd come in, hair's all messy, coffee.
Picking up a T-shirt off the ground. Like,
exactly. Grabbing whatever's on the ground as I roll in at the last possible second to bang out the show at 6 o'clock in the morning. And he'd be in that newsroom, and I'd walk by him, and he'd go, God, he looks great. Sharp-looking man, just...
Probably
wearing
shaven.
That shirt and tie, shaven, hair's all nice, like it was literally like he was stepping in and working in front of a camera, like he was on television.
Meanwhile, looked you threw out some deodorant just so it was like, I just can't stink this
exactly,
bad.
Exactly. Remember I told you the story about Penn and Teller? Remember I said how Penn Jillette wrote he was writing this book, and in one of the chapters in his book, he was talking about Siegfried and Roy, and he was saying the late Roy Horn, and he was talking about how he was, you know, so he's this Las Vegas personality, and he gets invited to this, like, grand opening of something, or an event where it's for charity, and he shows up, and he goes, and I show up, and I'm wearing jeans and a t-shirt, right? He goes, I'm just wearing jeans and a t-shirt, and I show up. And he goes, and he looks over, and he sees Siegfried and Roy, and they're dressed exactly as if they were going on stage, and they're meeting fans, they're shaking hands, they're signing autographs, and he realizes he's made a mistake because they knew who they were, and they knew what the fans wanted from them, and that's why they were willing to go get the makeup on, be impeccably dressed, be the showman that they were. He was like, I just grabbed t-shirts and a jeans to show up to this event. He goes, who's the bigger schmuck, me or the two guys that play the part of what people want to see? And you know what? I was the guy who's like, here, grab this, I'm going to work. And this guy dressed sharp with the tie, ties he probably got for Father's Day.
I took a little trip to my hometown. I only stopped just to look around. And as I walked along the thoroughfare, there was music playing everywhere.
It's Thursday, which means it's Throwback Thursday on Wake Up Call. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Listen, I'm going to apologize to those of you who grew up in this era, but now I absolutely understand why the Beatles just made you insane with joy. Okay, I'm just,
they just
that's all I can say.
You all.
I can totally understand why you girls were screaming your heads off. You boys were throwing, just jumping up and down for joy when the Beatles came on your local radio and record
this
play.
Guy was a big deal.
Who's this?
Paul Anka.
God love me. Can you imagine when you heard Twist and Shout compared to this? You know what?
Can you imagine pitching this now?
Oh, I know, right? You know what? To go right back to sports, when these artists heard the Beatles, was that like a golfer seeing Tiger Woods play and go, all right, I got to go to work?
Probably.
I have got to go to work.
It has to be, right?
Right?
I mean, when you see someone like that come in and ruin your world, your genre, your whatever job you're in, yeah, you're blown away.
Yeah.
I mean, you're sitting there like, oh, things are never going to be the same again.
Exactly. When Tiger's winning the Masters at 21, he's driving you by 50 yards, and you're like, shoot, I've got to go work out now.
No, let's talk about Tiger in the U.S. Open in 2000 on this day.
On this day, right?
15 just strokes.
Dominating. Where you were like, oh, no, I got to, like, chip and putt better. Holy cow, how am I going to do that?
I mean, he's 12 under. Ernie Els is plus 3, next closest person.
Yeah, no one broke par, and Woods was 12 under for the Open. It's not like he was 2 under and everybody was over par.
I think that's the best analogy we've ever had on the show.
Yeah.
Be honest with you. Yeah, I mean, Tiger Woods is the Beatles.
That's right. So you are a 1962, 61, 63 artist. You hear the Beatles for the first time and you go, oh, shoot, I could actually write interesting lyrics.
I mean, honestly, that's probably why Elvis disappeared.
Probably, yeah.
I mean, I know he played until he was 70s and then he took the spaceship home.
But
I mean, when you heard, was it 64 when the Beatles first appeared on Ed Sullivan?
Sure. It must have been a brand new thing. Like, oh, great, I'm going to have to go get a band. Shoot. These kids from Liverpool are changing my life. This pop stuff is not going to work anymore.
Yep.
What am
I
going to do?
They wore a suit and tie.
Yeah, and they wore a suit and tie is right. All right, so the information, there's a 113-page memo. Oh, I'm sorry, 113-page memo that the NBA has now given to the players that will talk about the safety and health protocols that will go on at Disney World. So in case you're wondering about some of the details of how these players are going to return to play come July, so they're going to get tested and there's going to be quarantines and all of that. But here's the deal. So these guys are going to be at Disney World, and they can't go to the parks, and they can't do anything. But here's what they got. Here's what they got. A chef and 24-hour food room for each team. So there's going to be a room that's going to just have food all the time, whenever they want. And you can also get room service. But there's going to be a chef there. So these guys will be well-fed. There'll be barbers and manicurists available by appointment. The players will get pools, trails, and golf courses for outdoor recreation. There'll be a lounge with video games, card tables, movie screenings, ping pong tables, and more indoor recreation. Now, here's the key. Here's another one. Mental health services by professionals or telehealth options. Now, I thought that was interesting because I think the league is going, look, guys, this ain't going to be easy. We're going to provide you with some golf. There's going to be a pool. You're going to have video games, card tables. There's going to be food. You're going to be living in these Disney resorts. But I know it's going to be different. It's not your life. You're going to be here. Like, you're basically going to be in basketball prison because while you're here, you're not allowed to leave. We're not letting you go to Orlando. You're not going to boogie down to Tampa to see some girl you were dating. No, those days are over. Your family will come in periodically, but that's it. You know, you're trapped here. So mental health services are going to be provided by the league. Guest rooms for players' families after the first round of the playoffs, that is going to be paid for by the players, and the option for a limited option for players to attend games as spectators. There are so many rules to this thing, and it really is going to be hard for players to keep up with everything. For example, if you're on the golf course, you can't share golf clubs. You can't play doubles matches in ping pong. They can't even reuse the same deck of cards that they use. So they're just going to constantly be bringing in cards like some sort of casino where, like, we've bet the cards in poker and throw them out at the end.
No, they're going to have a Monte Carlo night.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So this
for charity.
This is for real. And the league understands this isn't for everybody. There's a drop-dead date. You don't have to go. You won't be punished. You know, you're not going to lose money. You can be exempt from this if you want. You can go to the doctors and get a medical exemption if this ain't for you, because it ain't for everybody to go down to Disney World. So we'll see how this plays out. I give the NBA, and I've been saying this since the start of this plan, when this plan was looking like it was from just somebody's pipe dream to an actual reality, I said I give the NBA a ton of credit. There is a zillion obstacles to putting together something like this. A zillion.
Yes.
There are things you don't even think about until you have to think about them. And again, imagine being in a conference room. If you're Adam Silver and you're in a conference room with a whole bunch of people and you say, guys, we got this idea floating around about going to Disney World. It's a resort setting. It's an isolated setting. And we're going to be playing regular season games and the playoffs. I need everybody in this room to come up with 10 things that could go wrong. Give me 10 things that you see that could go wrong. And everyone's going, recreation time. What if one player tests positive? What if 10 players test positive? What if a whole team tests positive? I mean, like, think about the list that you could create if you came up with an idea of taking 22 basketball teams to Disney World. What could go wrong, right? Well, what about families? Are they going to be allowed to go? Can a player go to a game that he's not playing in? What if a player wants to go out for an emergency? Wife's having a child, or the father's on death's door and he's got to leave. What do we do? Like, think about a million of these things that are going to come up.
I guess if that was to happen, he's off the team, right?
10-day quarantine if you leave the bubble. You got to be out for 10 days. I'll be quarantined for 10 days.
And then I read somewhere, too. I mean, they're trying to figure out a way to bring families in.
Yep.
For the players.
Yeah.
Then how in the world? I mean, okay, maybe it's just a significant other. You can't bring your kids, right? Because how do you tell your kid, hey, we're staying at Disney World, you can't go?
No, you can. Yeah, you can't go to that theme park.
You see all the people having fun over there on those rides? No, that's not for us, kid.
And so, yeah, so this is really not going to be easy. I mean, this is, you know what, it reminds me of, like lawyers, like whenever you're putting together a promotion and the lawyers come up with everything that could go wrong with your radio promotion and you're like, boy, I never thought about that. And the lawyer goes, this is why I get paid what I get paid. I do think about these things. And you're like, oh, yeah, what if somebody falls and hits their head and, you know, a million things. That's what the NBA's had to go to. And I can only imagine the headache of trying to put this together. 113 pages. That is a small book.
Yeah.
On all the things that the players are allowed and not allowed to do while they're on this campus. Right? For example, let's say you want to go to it reminds me of Joe Pesci in Casino. He's like, let's say there's a restaurant in the casino that I want to go eat at. And Robert De Niro's like, you can't even set foot in the front door. If you're LeBron James and you're staying at one place, you can't go to another place to see a friend or eat dinner with another player. Like, it's if LeBron wants to eat dinner with Damian Lillard at the Yacht Club because the Blazers are staying there and they want to go to the steakhouse at the Yacht. LeBron can't go. LeBron can't go over there. I have no idea why.
So LeBron can only hang out with Kawhi Leonard and Giannis.
That's right. I have no idea why that's in place. Why can't, like, if LeBron is allowed to, you know, guard Damian Lillard in a basketball game, he can't have dinner with him at the steakhouse? No, can't. You cannot go to another resort to see anybody else. The teams you're going to be staying with are the teams you're basically isolated with. You can't hang out with them socially. Now, I think you can play golf. Like, if Damian Lillard and LeBron want to play golf, I think they can play golf.
What's the difference between that?
That's what I want to know. So who's coming up with these rules that says LeBron can't go to the yacht club to have dinner at the steakhouse with Damian Lillard, but they can meet at the Magnolia course and play a round of golf together? If they want to meet there to play golf, they can. But if LeBron wants to venture over to the yacht club, he can't. Now, if they're testing every single day, like, the virus can't, if two people don't have the virus isn't going to be spread. There's no virus. So if they're testing these guys all the time, why can't LeBron go over there? And now I'm wondering, what if LeBron tests positive for coronavirus? Because here was what was said in the analysis. The NBA believes that it's inevitable that some players are going to get the virus.
Of course.
Right? But why would my brain, for example, automatically assume that it's the third bench guy on the Lakers that we never see play? Why wouldn't it be LeBron? Why couldn't it? It could likely be Giannis. It could likely be Kawhi Leonard. Right? What if LeBron gets coronavirus playing in this thing? Seriously. I mean, what does the league do? Does the league pause? Stop play? Like, they're supposed to keep going. But if LeBron James gets coronavirus, I mean, won't you shut this thing down for a while until he's ready to come back? Are you going to continue with the postseason if LeBron James gets coronavirus? I would be like, the Lakers, let's see. Game one will be on Tuesday. Game two is going to be on September 9th. I would extend that puppy as far as I possibly could if LeBron or Kawhi or Giannis got coronavirus. I'd be like, when they come back is when we resume this playoff series. But it's inevitable. I mean, they think it's inevitable. So here's what's going to happen when it does. 113 pages. And I got to give them credit for it, because I can be lazy sometimes. I'd be like, yeah, screw it. We're not doing this. We'll see you next year. Goodbye. I don't know how to answer any of these questions. I don't want to know how to answer any of these questions. I don't know what to do. Good luck to everybody. We'll see you when we can get training camps up and running. But they sat down and hammered this thing out. Unlike Major League Baseball, Adam Silver and his team hammered out. And at least the NBA is saying to its players, this is the best we can do. Right? Y'all want to play? Y'all want to have a 2020/21 champion? Or no, 2019/20 champion? This is how we're going to do it, folks. So if this isn't for you, you can walk out now. But if you're willing to make some history, if you're willing to go on this journey, come to Orlando. Be isolated from your family and friends at the Disney World Resort. Enjoy the fireworks over the Magic Kingdom from afar. Because you aren't going to go over there and play basketball, and we'll see what happens. But, you know, it's got to be tough, but it was there. God.
And at the same time, they still have something better than baseball has.
And they still have, exactly. And they still are putting together something better than baseball has been able to bang out and put together. All right, on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. Coming up next hour, good, the bad, and the dumb. Josh Alper is going to join us as well, as we're going to talk some NFL. We're getting closer to report dates. Like, you would normally have report dates, you know, obviously that comes in July, but that's next month. About a month from now is when we would have seen training camps start to percolate around for some teams. But where is the NFL stand right now? And what about Colin Kaepernick? Is he going to land? We'll talk about that coming up next hour. As we continue on Wake Up Call, ESPN Nation Radio.
It's Thursday, which means it's Throwback Thursday on Wake Up Call.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Throwback Thursday, 1960, U.S. Open at Cherry Hills, Arnold Palmer winning the U.S. Open, beating out Jack Nicklaus, a 20-year-old Jack Nicklaus, and also Ben Hogan, and a slew of other golfers by shooting 65. Arnie's Army was awesome. Arnold Palmer was great.
Yeah, it was.
He really was great. Swashbuckling. Listen, I'm not a smoker, and I don't think you should smoke, but he did look cool with just having a cigarette dangling from his mouth while he was playing golf back in the 60s.
But here's the question. Is the greatest thing he ever did that SportsCenter commercial?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, where he does the tee with the
when he makes it, makes when he the makes it Arnold Palmer.
With the caddy right behind him. Stops by.
And was it Stuart Scott and somebody goes,
Scott Van Pelt.
Scott Van Pelt. They go, that was awesome.
That was awesome. It's great. By the way, why did how come Arnold Palmer? Please tell me somebody else came up with that idea and he just kind of
seriously
took
right?
it to the next level.
I mean, he can't be the first one that did
was
that.
Was he really the first one to think, oh, you know, it would be good since I normally have lemon with my iced tea, maybe just some lemonade in my iced tea. He couldn't have created that. He might have been the guy that goes, he took it to the next level, right? Because that had somebody. Well, somebody from the South came up with that.
Yeah, I mean, right? he got that from somebody.
Somebody told him that. And he went, let me try.
There's somebody who's been sick to their stomach ever since. That drink could have been named after me. Been called the John Rogers.
That's right. You know what's really popular here is half and half tea, sweet tea and unsweet tea together. Because the sweet tea here will make your teeth hurt.
I can't get into any of that tea.
Sweet tea, man.
Can't get into sweet tea.
When I was first time I ever went to South Carolina, the iced tea I grew up with was my mother put a bunch of tea in a pitcher and maybe threw a little sugar in there. The first time I had sweet tea when I was a freshman in South Carolina, I thought it was the greatest thing in the world until I realized I gained 15 pounds in about 8 minutes. That's how I realized sweet tea was dangerous. It's like you feel the fat just getting bigger.